Plenty. The I've done an awful lot of conservation easements, and I'm usually doing the program on conservation easements, so it's a delight to listen to somebody else do the program. But I will offer a couple other things and then get into the mitigation bank. Several years ago, when we started the California Rangeland Trust in California, we assumed that we would start out slow with a few people wanting to say we'd have an interest in putting forth our land for consideration, for an easement to be purchased, and we assumed that most of that would be so they could protect the land for the kids and for the family. We found out two things very quickly. One, there's a hell of a lot of people that have an interest putting conservation easement on their land. They're far outrunning the available money sources. Where we have the benefits that we do have, and I'll speak to a minute of that. But we also found out that as many people want to save it for the family as want to protect it from the damn family. Because the kids ran off, married the shoe clerk who's over here and can hardly wait for mom and I to tip over and and commercialize this right out of existence. So there are a lot of driving needs and interests in the easements. Kayleen was only in high school when she put a conservation easement on her land at Parkfield, so her father Kevin sitting next to her wouldn't go out and spend all the money on new horses. There's one preserving it for the family. The value, the one thing we need to do in the long run is getting the appraisal world more focused on the value of these easements. Because right now, you can have the best piece of conservation land sitting next to something kind of barren, and they'll both get, for this purpose, valued at about the same. There needs to be added in some real incentive bumps in the appraisal because you have extraordinary conservation value. As far as money availability, and the point was made that not all states have the access to money sources. I would say that's true, but there are some sources that are not state. We started before California got into the bond measure monies. We started with private trusts making money available to purchase them. That is something we ought to be encouraging. These trusts kick out an awful lot of money to environmental causes and things. Some of the major foundations should be putting a lot more money, back into funding conservation easements. They get more bang for the buck there than some of the places it's now going. The one thing I would observe relative to a couple of the questions that were asked, the commercial ranching or commercial farming purpose needs to be incorporated as one of the elements of the conservation purposes in the easement so that you can never have conservation trumping over it by later interpretations, because ranching is the conservation. And on top of that being handy, it's sure as hell true. There can be some protections these can provide to certain environmental enforcement issues, particularly if you're doing something, protecting a riparian area, etc. That will buffer you from some both regulatory and some environmental pressures, but certainly Clean Water Act or your state clean water things or air would not be among those. You'll get no insulation on those sort of purposes. It was mentioned burning, dumping. If you're lucky enough to be in a state where you can still do that, we're not so lucky. It's easy for us to give those away because we can't do them on our ranches anyway. As far as the nuisance value, the odors and that, your protection there lies in your state right to farm statutes, and a lot of states have them. The Iowa was one of the first ones that was the model that a number of states have used. That's where your protection lies there. These easements don't protect you from nuisance suits for private parties. Then you have no hope. There's nothing worse than a damn attorney. Relative to transfer rights, a little was mentioned there. The easement will have to deal both with your transferability. There it's pretty simple. Anybody you transfer it to will have to live to the restrictions because they will be a recorded impact on your deed. It was mentioned that there's various ways to approach the trustee transferability. We have done some in each of the ways that was mentioned. In other places where the leverage was maybe a little different, we just list places that it can't be transferred to, no governmental bodies, and sometimes we list quite a list of environmental plaintiff organizations that cannot get into that business as well. Like has been said several times here, these instruments, even though there's a general model to them, can be negotiated out to any detail, and that's part of the planning with people and advisors that are familiar and smart with this, and with the people that are close to you in your families. It was mentioned also the question about what if the trustee changes their attitude over time. Trustee can only enforce against you for you violating a term in the easement. So the example that was offered, and I know it was only an example, they couldn't do that because your easement would never have given them right to enforce that. They can't self-execute. When they're going to enforce against you, they have to go to court, and the instrument wouldn't give them the grounds to do that. On that example, that doesn't mean the issue isn't there. You could just get a soft adversarial. They've got to go to court, and they have to use this instrument to enforce against against you. Anyway, enough on conservation easements. The mitigation banks, which are somewhat new. Endangered Species Act, close to all your hearts, I'm sure. The Federal Endangered Species Act, of course, is something that we have had quite a history with. The agencies, of course, have used it for regulatory and enforcement purposes. The environmental community has used it to sue on. That hasn't gotten as much in the way of conservation across this country. It made landowners and land operators fight the act, fight the regulators, fight the environmentalists. And it made being pretty attractive, the three S's, a shoot, shovel, and shut up. Avoid the species, avoid the good habitat, absolutely counterproductive instincts. And what is happening is the enforcing agencies, Fish and Wildlife Service, most particularly, is garnering a far more healthy and productive view is emerging. They realize that even in the states that are mostly public land, most of the protected species are on private land. Why in the hell is that the case? One, it may be a little better land. But on top of that, it's a lot better managed. And there's a lot of things that are harboring or attracting the protected species. So there's a need they are seeing to reward good stewardship. Something that we just said the appraisal world hasn't figured out on conservation easements. The premise of the mitigation banks is to allow landowners to get value for the species that and the habitat for them that they have preserved. And ranching is made for this. How a conservation mitigation bank operates is you enter an agreement with Fish and Wildlife Service that you will have a conservation easement, borrow a little here on the prior notion, on your land, designed only around the protection of that species. And I'll come back to this. It might be, I'll speak from California examples, the vernal pool, it might be kit fox, it might be particular flowers, the tiger salamander, we've done them all for each of these. And then they will come out, you will have a biologist come out, look at your land, and evaluate how much of it has vernal pools or how much of it is good habitat for the burrowing owl, something like this. And then also put a factor in there on the quality of it, so you might get a bonus. The example I'll use that was in the materials on vernal pools has probably had about 50 acres of vernal pools, but because they were particularly good habitat, they were allowed to sell 65 credits. You got to bump up. Sometimes it's better than 2-1. Now, you were assigned that many credits on your land. The Fish and Wildlife, the service keeps track that you have these for your land. And then as developers or private parties who are going to do development where they are going to impact the species, then they are mandated to go protect on some ratio. Might be 2-1, might be 3-1. Occasionally 4-1, where they have to protect that much acreage. Then they come to you and say, we understand you have these credits to sell. And then, without the Fish and Wildlife Service, private party negotiations between you and they, a certain value is placed on that, and you sell them the amount of credits they need. That goes into Fish and Wildlife. They take off of your registry that many units. And these units vary quite a bit in value. It depends, of course, by the area and the developing need. There are certain markets that have arisen per the different species. Some of the least valuable kit fox acreages, maybe $150-$200 an acre. The vernal pool, something between $65,000 and $85,000 a credit. The California tiger salamander, we were at about $17,000 in the last couple months. Those probably jumped up to be about $19,000. Dollars. The some Delhi sands flower down Riverside County, $150,000 an acre through an HCCP. So these things can start to have some value. Now remember, when we're talking about conservation easements, given the appraisal differential for the easement, probably talking in terms of 40-55% net return back to you, the general terms. Let's talk about what the mitigation banks could have. I'll use one example, a real-life example, of about an 800-acre native grass, non-irrigated piece of land, San Joaquin County. Ranch value might be something around $3,000 an acre. You could argue it one way or another. So you have a ranch there, there's 800 acres. Probably has about a $3 million value at the outside. If you put an easement on it, you'd probably get about half of that back. Might have gotten, $1.5 million at the outside. Alternatively, if you were managing it, you could say, maybe I could put it in grapes, you could say orchard or something, increase its value in that area maybe to $7,000 an acre. If you're a little better, grapes might be $12,000. If you're in Kevin's area, might be a hell of a lot more if you're in Napa. different world, and they only made so many Napa Valleys. you might be able to change from ranching to some sort of increased value agriculture. Yeah, you might have converted that $2.5-3 million ranch to maybe $6 million value over time. The but mitigation banks were credited about 68 credits of the for vernal pools at $65,000 an acre. Those have been sold out. There's $4.4 million that rancher has in his pocket already. And because you can layer these over one another, as long as they're consistent species and the easement works for both, the on Tiger Salamander, he was credited 710 credits over this 800 acres, because the salamander, unlike a vernal pool, is only so big, but the salamander, as you know, metamorphizes and crawls out and comes back, so you got to protect the whole area that he might migrate over. So we've got 710 acres there that are right now selling a little over 17,000 over course of 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years, however fast he has the market and can sell those, the he'll get probably about $12 million there. So the here's a chance, this 800 acres the give me one.
He's already got the easement in place, and now he's going to go back and sell these.
Yeah, you, the easement, when you set up the easement, and I was going to mention what the easement is here. The easement language here has about three provisions. Provision against development, which most all these have, or subdivision, and then an affirmative obligation. Has to run at least as many cattle on this ranch that he has historically run. The a mandate to run cattle. If he goes out of the cattle business, has to find somebody to run cattle on these lands. That is the affirmative obligation. Can't be anything worse than making you be in the cattle business, I guess. The the of course the reason that one's so easy, the is because the it is regarded that cattle grazing is beneficial to vernal pools and salamander type habitat. That's not true of all species, of course, in all applications, but there's starting to be an understanding that there is at least harmony, if not benefit, that can come from the running, you know, of cattle. So the mitigation banks aren't a panacea for everyone. First off, the it isn't regionally as limited, because the it doesn't take a funding source. It will be the development community puts these together, the that buys these. So you don't have the restriction that, you know, that you had mentioned from the East Coast to California, because we have easement money. You can put these mitigation banks together, frankly, a lot faster than you can the conservation easements, because you don't have to fuss around with the, you know, getting the money and going through the double audit systems and all of the frustrations that you can have there. So they are very much a new and emerging tool, but something that can do what we have talked about for a long time, and that's bringing real value back to good habitat and good practices on the ground. This, of course, has to relate just to the endangered species side of things. Let me say one thing further. And the because the truth of the matter is, the sometimes it takes a little management impact, but we can live with a lot of endangered species. The some of them we don't live so good with, but we run one ranch in the central part of California that on one sizable ranch we have 9 endangered species. The and we've had to do a little bit of adjustment to protect you know, some water, but that's pretty much it. The now, with some species, that wouldn't be quite so convenient to. And I know that on both of the coasts, we have a lot more species, so there's a lot more listed species. So there's a lot more opportunity to do this than just everywhere, but every place does have endangered species, and every place would have the opportunity through the Fish and Wildlife Service to set these up. Ma'am, you had a question.
I did. I feel a little left out.
Lucky you.
I couldn't agree more with you. I live in the eastern part of the United States.
Sure.
And where do I go to find out what my
The you could go easily on a website to Fish and Wildlife Service, or you would just give a call to your Fish and Wildlife Service regional office, and ask for somebody in the endangered species unit. Mr. Sinton.
You mentioned the mitigation banks for the Fish and Wildlife Service. Some land trusts are now lining up landowners with various species and marketing direct to developers who have to do mitigation. A lot of states now require mitigations for projects all over.
Sure.
And any state that has that kind of a law, you've got a potential straight-through cash deal with no government involvement at all.
Tell me that again. I didn't connect with all of it.
An example we did in California is we had development of a golf course, and there was a requirement for a particular species set aside, and we had a rancher who had those species.
So he set up, sure.
So there was no government involved, other than the government said, you're going to have to go out and mitigate this with 50 acres, and we said, we know the landowners.
Yeah, that's just private mitigation. You know, we're doing a couple of those. We're finding some places and matching those up. You wouldn't have to set up a bank. You could do that, directly. Takes the buy-off of Fish and Wildlife Service as far as the person who needs the credits, that those are applicable for their need. But that's the only involvement there.
Actually, this was a municipality that made the requirement. So Fish and Wildlife Service never came up.
Oh, so the municipality was the...
The municipality required mitigation set aside.
Yeah.
Use of mitigation banks that require you to develop an HCP.
The HCPs are getting very popular, and are in some places being promoted by councils of local governments in order to make it easy for the development community have a place to go. That's a little different than a private mitigation bank, but those HCCPs are certainly getting vogue, particularly in areas where the local municipalities think their developers are being hamstrung because they can't find places to mitigate these. You bet.
I'm not sure if the Land Trust Alliance is where I'm about to say came from, or from the Southeast. Our negotiating for the right kind of mitigation bank all opposed completely cratered the whole deal. The Land Trust just said we had it absolutely in all regards and shapes and form against our whole core being to allow you, after you put your land in easement, to be able to let a developer do something over here by coming to you, and in our case, sell, let's say, water is the clean water is a big deal. And, the Corps of Engineers
yep.
Detroit. And so I just want to make that known for whoever else is in the East, that you really got to fight tooth and nail to have the right to have that mitigation.
I think that's short-sighted, frankly, of the land trust in that example. But
our argument was this: carbon sequestering is just coming in. We've got 500 acres of forest.
Right.
I've got a forestry management plan. What if Duke Power Company comes to me and says, if you won't cut and harvest this forest, which is allowed in your easement?
Yep.
We're going to give you so much money, and they finally comprehended that.
Exactly, and there's all sorts of opportunities, a whole different subject than we're on now, but trading, you can trade water, you can trade air credits, you can trade carbon credits. That's a whole different issue than we're talking about, but related, no question. Lynn?
Bill, if you have an easement, if you sell an easement now, say, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, 5 years from now, they discover you actually have enhanced the habitat for an endangered species. Can you go back in and take another look at your easement that's in place and get a mitigation for that endangered species?
Probably raises two or three sub-questions. First off, once you start enhancing habitat, you want to get a safe harbor agreement from Fish and Wildlife Service, and they've been a long time coming, but we have those now where we've are getting those in place. That's a piece of it. The as far as going, and it gets somewhat tricky to create the mitigation bank on top of where you already have an easement, but you can do that. You got to do that carefully, but you can do that. The other way doesn't work as good. If you've already created the mitigation bank, then you're not going to be able to create the easement on top of it for conservation easement purpose.
Another question: in Montana, we don't have a land trust. Probably should have been as proactive as California and Colorado years ago and created one. But there's a lot of interest in one now. Can we adopt California and Colorado?
Only if I get to come up there and look at that lot of California land. With the alliance, and I'll turn it to Lynn, with the alliances that you've been putting together, is there any difficulty in jumping over state boundaries, or does that go back to the instrument of the particular organization?
Yeah, I think it's, wherever, whenever they came into being as the 501c3, I can't speak to what the other states did, but Colorado said, the only way that they would accept easements outside the state if it was a property that ran over state borders, and we do have a couple examples of that. Because I know Wyoming asked us the same question, and we finally said, you guys need to go form your own land trust, and they did. And so we probably should say that the states that do have it are Wyoming, Colorado, California, Nevada, Oregon, Kansas, and then in Montana, the Montana Land Reliance also has a cooperative agreement with the Montana stock growers, too. So, but, if you look, there's usually ag land trusts in different states. And what I would suggest, and make sure that you all get this book before you leave. This does a really good job of talking about different types of easements, and it should be out in the front if you didn't get one, called Crossroads and Conservation. The Colorado Cattlemen put this out, but it talks about people just like you guys, the landowners themselves, what they did and why they did it. But also on the very back page is potential resources, and there's one that references the Land Trust Alliance. You can go on their website and actually find a map, and you can click on your part of the world, and it'll tell you what organizations may be available to hold easements. So that's one resource for you.
I did several of these, Lynn, California, before we had California Rangeland Trust. There's two or three that I have actually almost equal comfort with than dealing with our own. Cherry Teresa's Center for Natural Lands comes to mind.
Just one other quick point.
Yep.
In Montana, there's two developers out of Spokane that are buying ranches and using the mitigation monies to create wetlands. I guess there's an unlimited pool of money available under the Federal Transportation Act with this money to change the use of these hay meadows and make them into wetlands.
They've got quite a bit of money there, and they are often a piece of the funding source on some of the easements. One that we did on one of our ranches along 395, it was about a $6 million easement. Over $1 million of that came from the Federal Highway Scenic Funds. There was no conversion or anything, just that was one of the sources. That source would be available anywhere nationally.
Bill, I'm sorry.